Today on Against the Grain, fiction that imagines alternate futures is often associated with the left, with writers like Octavia Butler and Ursula Le Guin. But the tropes of science fiction are well suited to the right. And, as Jordan Carroll illustrates, far-right authors and aficionados have populated the ranks of speculative fiction since its inception, including James Madoff, ardent science fiction fan and neo-Nazi party founder.
Science fiction has always reflected the culture in which it appears. So there have always been racist or white supremacist elements in science fiction, as well as progressive and socialist and anti-racist ones. But we see right after World War II, this figure, James H. Madoff, who is a science fiction fan trying to rally together other science fiction fans to create a political party. And he is ultimately rebuffed, but he goes on to be the first major leader of a significant neo-Nazi party in the United States. And he ultimately incorporates elements from science fiction into his political ideology.
Carroll discusses the right's ongoing fight to claim the future. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California, this is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio. I'm Sasha Lilly. Speculative fiction, encompassing fantasy and science fiction, whether in literature or film, is enormously popular. And according to scholar Jordan Carroll, it's long been a battleground over the future. Who gets to imagine it and who gets to inhabit it? He's co-editor of the forthcoming book, Reactionary World Building, From Speculative Imagination to Political Practice, and the author of Speculative Whiteness, Science Fiction and the Alt-Right. Jordan, many on the left hold the idea that speculative fiction, in which one can imagine utopian futures, can help open the possibilities of radical social change. That is, it widens the horizons of the possible, which might ultimately move people to transform society themselves. Do you think that science fiction has an innate politics? Do you think that it leans left?
I think that is the story we've often told. When we think about science fiction now, we often think about Octavia Butler or Ursula K. Le Guin. But as I argue in the book, that is the result of a long history of struggle. It wasn't always the case, and it isn't always the case, that science fiction is left-leaning. There have been science fiction fans on the right and even the far right for many decades, and science fiction has been used for right-wing purposes for a very long time. So I think that we have to think of science fiction not as having an inherent or innate politics, but as a kind of field of struggle where there are multiple political tendencies. And although the left has won out in recent years, there are other kinds of political tendencies within science fiction that we have to study.
How important do you think the terrain of science fiction or speculative fiction, which in effect is the terrain, or usually the terrain of the future, how important is that to the far right and to those who might situate themselves on the far right who engage in this broad genre?
I think science fiction and more broadly ideas about the future is deeply important for the far right. I think that we normally think of the past when we think of the right. We think of conservatism and returning to imagined traditional values and recreating some moment prior to the Civil Rights Act or prior to the Civil War or even in a medieval world or the world of antiquity. But actually, often the far right is envisioning a radically different future. And they use science fiction in part as a way of depicting what life will be like after the right-wing revolution and ultimately genocide. So one of the ways that they use science fiction is to create a vision of a right-wing utopia, a world characterized by even greater technological progress, but one that is all white and controlled by some kind of fascist state or authoritarian government. And so they use it in part to appeal to audiences, but also they want to claim science fiction for themselves and claim the capacity to envision the future for themselves. They believe that only white men can imagine a future, essentially.
And we'll return in a moment to the question of the future, but I did want to ask you about what you just flagged, which is, you know, we do associate the right with a kind of nostalgia for the past, a sense of a loss, of society changed in a way that has now upended the supposedly natural order of things, and that those who once were in power have been knocked down. Isn't there a realm within, you know, speculative fiction that does look to the past? You know, it's easy to think of the general trope of kings and queens and knights and all of that stuff. Is that about the past? Is that about the future as well?
I mean, there's definitely an aspect of speculative fiction that is about fantasy and about imagining past worlds or worlds that are similar to something like the medieval era as well. And there is a lot of science fiction that is about imagining alternative histories and thinking through how things could have been. And I think you're right. Like, I don't think that we should suggest that the far right isn't interested in nostalgia at all. I think what we might say instead is that the far right imagines a future that is very much rooted in the past. They believe that only by returning to traditional values can we have things like space exploration or genetic manipulation. They believe that science and technological progress and economic dynamism that would create a novel future are actually the product of primordial or traditional roots, that the white race is the creator of the future, and that only by recreating older hierarchies can they build another future.
You write about how the right sees culture as a crucial realm of struggle. You know, in the famous words now of Andrew Breitbart, the idea that politics is downstream from culture, that you can shape politics by battling on the terrain of culture. Do you think that the far right's interest in science fiction is simply instrumentalist? That is, that it's an area to exploit, you know, if you want to operate in the lexicon of the popular, to kind of get into these realms of culture, seems like one way, a kind of maybe a gateway for people to encounter far-right ideas? Or do you think that there is something about science fiction as it has been embodied, at least by some of its creators, that has a natural affinity for the far-right?
I think both are true. I mean, we could see clearly that science fiction has been a really useful gateway for the far right. Often there will be some kind of controversy, a person of color cast in a science fiction movie, for example, that they see that as controversial, and they latch onto that and use that as a way to put themselves out there, to get attention on social media, to essentially rise to the level of the public agenda. Most people are not going to seek out fascists in their lairs, but they might, for example, see a news story or a Twitter trend in which fascists are arguing about the latest blockbuster film. At the same time, though, I think that they really are invested in science fiction futures. I don't think it's just a matter of a kind of opportunistic approach to science fiction. And I think that they are finding something that's very much in the genre's tradition. Although, as I've suggested, we think of science fiction as progressive, it has a long history of interest in a kind of ideology of explorers on the frontier, seeing space as a kind of arena for a settler colonial project of expansion, conquering the stars, in some cases, subjugating alien populations on other worlds. We also see a lot of elitism in science fiction. Many science fiction stories are about a group of people who are smarter than everybody else or better than everybody else, whether they are just genius inventors or even mutant superhumans. And so I think that the far right latches on to these elements that are within the history of the genre. They look at the power fantasies that we see in especially early science fiction, and they look at the ways that science fiction has reflected a white supremacist and settler colonial culture, and they try to capitalize on those elements of science fiction history. Those elements have been resisted in more recent years by later science fiction authors, but I don't think that we can simply dismiss them entirely. We can't think of current fascists as outside agitators who are coming in and ruining science fiction. We have to think of them as something that has been in science fiction culture for a long time, that we have to struggle with.
Well, let's talk more about those sort of tropes of science fiction that provide fertile ground and maybe have kind of intersect in some of their sensibilities with that of the far right or white supremacism or even fascism. Can you talk about the sort of heroic protagonist or protagonists in science fiction, which you started to touch on, how important figures like that are to the genre and how they can, very easily provide or lied into far-right ideas?
We see a number of science fiction protagonists who are not only better than everybody else, but also capable of completely reshaping the world. I think this is a tendency that many in the science fiction community have critiqued. If you look at Paul Atreides in Frank Herbert's Dune or Khan in Star Trek, these are larger-than-life figures who are capable of completely overturning the past order and bringing about a new world. And yet, in those texts, they are critiqued. Often, science fiction authors will evoke a kind of authoritarian yearning for a great leader only in order to deny that and suggest that that will lead to domination and bloodshed. But what the far right does often is they find these moments in science fiction where the image of that great leader is being denied, or where there's a fascist impulse that's being critiqued, and they ignore the part that's critical. They extol the virtues of the figure of a great leader or a kind of superhuman that's going to change the world, often missing the point of science fiction texts. But at the same time, it's still there. It's still something that the science fiction community saw a need to grapple with and saw a need to speak back to at an earlier moment in its history.
I'm speaking with Jordan Carroll about his book, Speculative Whiteness: Science Fiction and the Alt-Right. I'm Sasha Lilly, and this is Against the Grain. Well, even though there's the nuance, as you said, or can be the nuance in some of these books around certain figures and the idea of kind of authoritarian leadership, the idea of those, the talented, the gifted, who are kind of set apart from society, maybe even in some ways reviled, and who are there to fulfill their destiny, is something that runs through science fiction and through mainstream American literature more broadly. And you mentioned the highly influential book, Atlas Shrugged, written by Ayn Rand, published in 1957, which launched many libertarian How would you understand that book, so widely read, you know, partly because, of course, right-wing organizations pay for copies of the book to be sent to schools, but nonetheless, in relationship to science fiction?
So in some ways, it is a science fiction text. We see a future world where government overreach has increased. There's a science fiction invention at the end of the book. But I think the thing that really connects it to these authoritarian tendencies in science fiction is the idea of not just an elite, but an elite that is capable of imagining the future, an elite that is willing to be self-disciplined but also capable of being imaginative and thereby inventing new things, new technologies or new business practices. And the idea in that book, which I think we find in some early science fiction as well, is that these dreamers, these future-oriented pioneers, are being held back by the masses, that the moochers or takers are parasites upon these great men and women and are restricting them through regulations and through taxation and preventing them from realizing their great vision of the future. So what's insidious about that, I think, beyond the obvious right-wing politics of it, is this idea that only a capitalist elite or a small minority of geniuses is capable of envisioning some other world. And I think that that resonates with both elements of early science fiction culture, you know, visions of superhuman mutants, but also the far right, which also sees the future as being created by a small number of white men.
Well, let's talk about early science fiction, which you've mentioned. How far back do the links between the far right and science fiction go?
They go back fairly deep. As I've suggested, science fiction has always reflected the culture in which it appears. So there have always been racist or white supremacist elements in science fiction, as well as progressive and socialist and anti-racist ones. But we see right after World War II, this figure, James H. Madoll, who is a science fiction fan trying to rally together other science fiction fans to create a political party. And he is ultimately rebuffed, but he goes on to be the first major leader of a significant neo-Nazi party in the United States. And he ultimately incorporates elements from science fiction into his political ideology. He envisions a technologically sophisticated future governed by a kind of cognitive elite, one where genocide has already eliminated all non-white people. And he imagined this elite evolving past humanity and then going off into the stars. And so we see early on this deep connection between science fiction culture and the far right, and that persists in the present. It's not something that simply emerged in the last 10 or 20 years with fringe online forums or anything like that. We've seen the specter of fascism kind of lurking in science fiction culture going back to the mid-century period.
Who was John Campbell and how did he influence science fiction in his time and beyond?
He was a major editor of science fiction magazines. He edited Astounding, and he had a number of right-wing beliefs, and he believed in this vision of the kind of the great man sort of moving history as well. And we can kind of see his imprint throughout science fiction culture. He cultivated many important science fiction authors. And in more recent years, because of the way that science fiction has changed, the community has moved on from idolizing him as this great figure in science fiction culture, and instead has very much critiqued his legacy and what he did.
So, John Campbell, you were talking about his influence, and I wanted to ask you more broadly about how kind of white supremacist views imbued science fiction and how they were tied or could be tied to this idea of space exploration and also to eugenics.
A lot of science fiction draws on, as I've suggested, the myth of the frontier when they talk about space exploration. They imagine that space is something to be colonized. And we even see with the far right this idea that white people need to colonize space, they need to go out into the stars and conquer. So I think that a lot of how people talk about space exploration is rooted in the settler colonial past. And I think that often we see the figure of the space explorer as a kind of colonizer. And so I think that that kind of has fed into the way the far right talks about space. We see, for example, a number of fascist figures who are hostile to the idea that black people are could be involved in NASA or space exploration, or we see the fantasy of space as a place where white people can go in order to escape other racial populations in a lot of far right rhetoric. And so I think that some of these ideas get encoded in tropes that might seem otherwise fairly innocent, but when you really look at it, what's happening is the old ideas of the past about colonialism, about imperialism, and ultimately about domination of racialized others is being transposed into a new setting or into a new kind of set of images.
How did the social ferment and upheaval of the 60s shape the right of science fiction? I mean, obviously, the figures, people like Ursula K. Le Guin and Octavia Butler, wrote in a social context of the left. But I wanted to ask you how science fiction writers on the right responded to those struggles, the Black Freedom Movement, including writers like Robert Heinlein.
So Heinlein wrote a book called Farnham's Freehold that in some ways tried to grapple with the racial politics of the time. And it was ostensibly a kind of parable that was, at least on one level, it seems like was trying to maybe critique white supremacy. He imagines a world in which people of color are dominant over society, and white people are the slaves and subordinates of them. And on the surface, it seems like what he's trying to do is to estrange existing racial hierarchies, and in a maybe in an awkward way, try to critique them. But if you look carefully at the book, it gradually becomes clear that he very much believes in the racial hierarchy, the new order dominated by people of color is stagnant. It's incapable of coming up with new ideas, and only the white slaves, including this time sort of time traveler from the past, are capable of inventing anything new. So even as Heinlein is trying to make what seems like a racially liberal point, he actually betrays a deep racism and an inability to think of people of color as anything but representing the past and representing a kind of technological, economic, and social stagnation. But there are other ways, I think, that science fiction culture was influenced by the struggles of the 1960s. We see, for example, science fiction authors debating about Vietnam, and they fall on both sides of that question. There are many science fiction authors who supported the Vietnam War during that period. So again, we have to think of science fiction not as homogeneous or unified in progressive politics, but as containing both left and right wings.
And as I think you alluded to earlier, also how readers of particular orientations choose to read books also seems to be relevant here. I wonder if you could talk about Dune, which I believe is the most widely read science fiction publication, which inspired other books and a franchise as well, how that ended up being an inspiration to the far right.
Dune, I mean, it has a really complicated politics. It seems like it's warning against the idea of the great leader, the superhuman who is going to overthrow the world and initiate a new order. In later books, that is clearly condemned, and we're clearly supposed to not invest in the figure of Paul Atreides as our great leader, but as instead to recognize that our desire for a savior, for somebody who will change the world for us, is in some ways, in a lot of ways, authoritarian. But when the far right looks at Dune, they don't always recognize that aspect of the series. They are interested in the figure of Paul Atreides, or the figure of the God Emperor, as a model for how the world should work. They believe that the narrative suggests that only a despotic ruler is capable of restraining the masses who have short-term interests, and bringing about a better world that is governed by longer-term interests. They also invest in this idea of the great leader who is willing to take risks. Paul Atreides is willing to risk the possibility that, for example, spice, which is this kind of drug that allows for space travel, he's willing to allow that to be destroyed in the narrative, or he's willing to risk that, I should say, in order to get what he wants. So he's willing to endure these kinds of apocalyptic risks in order to bet on a better, grander future. And so I think that's really appealing for the far right. They believe that people have become too risk averse, and in particular that white men are too comfortable and too insulated from dangers and struggles. And they envision a world in which great leaders from the white population will gamble on a kind of a different future, a different world, and in the process show that they are superior to others through their willingness to risk devastation and disaster.
Jordan Carroll is my guest. We're discussing his book, Speculative Whiteness, Science Fiction and the Alt-Right. This is Against the Grain, and I'm Sasha Lilly. Well, one book that is pretty explicit in its politics is The Turner Diaries, which was published in 1979 by William Luther Pierce, who used the pseudonym Andrew MacDonald, head of the National Alliance, a white nationalist group. Can you tell us about him and about the importance of this book for the right?
Yes, the Turner Diaries has been essentially the Bible of much of the far right, and has often provided an instruction manual for right-wing terrorism. But it's also, in some sense, a science fiction dystopia. It envisions a future in which white people are endangered and oppressed, and then it imagines after that, a revolution in which non-white people are executed and eliminated, and to make way for a white nationalist utopia. And so we can see one of the ways that the far right uses science fiction is by engaging in these kinds of persecution fantasies where they see themselves as dominated and marginalized and controlled. Obviously, this is just a fantasy. It's not how reality actually works, but it's a powerful mobilizing force. And we see many imitators in the right-wing science fiction world try to recreate this, where they envision different kinds of multicultural dystopias in order to present white men who are dominant in the real world as put upon, oppressed, marginalized. But we also see in this text moments that reflect some of the history I've been talking about. There is a kind of vision of what William Luther Pierce calls elsewhere a Faustian impulse, an impulse to expand, an impulse to innovate. We see moments in the text that suggest that he is trying to imagine the sort of primordial impulse that motivates white people, supposedly a desire to break free from prior constraints and to ultimately expand out into the universe.
Speaking of sort of fantasies of the right, what do you make of the Left Behind novels, the series by Tim LaHaye, which I think started in the mid-90s, which are these post-apocalyptic, post-rapture pieces of super far-right fiction? Could you or would you situate them within speculative fiction and science fiction?
To some extent, yeah. I mean, they definitely imagine a speculative future and one in which Christians are oppressed. I mean, we might see them as part of the same tradition. David M. Higgins writes about this in his book, Reverse Colonization, where people in power can envision a world in which they are the ones that are dominated. I think that is definitely part of what's going on here. And, you know, recently we've seen Peter Thiel, for example, warning about the Antichrist, which he envisions as government regulation expanded to stifle innovation and freedom as a way of securing people from risks and dangers. And so I think that the far right is very much invested in apocalyptic imagery and this idea of some kind of totalitarian state that they're fighting against. And they also, as in the Turner Diaries, are interested in bringing that to some kind of final war or final confrontation in which the forces of good and evil are finally going to battle openly. And they believe that their side will ultimately triumph.
Bringing things up to the present, which of course you just touched on, I wonder if you could talk about the interest and crossover of the alt-right. So that part of the far right, the white supremacist right, which became very visible in the 2010s. Richard Spencer, who was famous for being the Nazi who was punched on tape, which went viral all around the world, was the kind of charismatic leader figure, partly famous because so much of the mainstream media decided he was the poster boy who should be on, you know, interviewed and all over the place. But he is someone who is a fan and a close observer of science fiction and a critic of science fiction, I guess you could say. Can you tell us about the overlap of the alt-right, that part of the right often associated with young men who spent much of their time online, with the world of science fiction and science fiction fandom?
Yes, I mean, it's strange to say, but Richard Spencer spends so much time on science fiction texts. He often, in his podcasts, is doing close readings of science fiction films And trying to interpret them through a white nationalist lens. And it's, he's even done a course for his followers on science fiction cinema. And so this is a pretty important part of his political career, even though most people know him from his public persona as a right-wing political commentator. He's very much invested in these sort of esoteric readings of science fiction films. And I think for him, he sees science fiction as an important vehicle for his politics. He and his followers imagine that science fiction is a way of promoting almost subconsciously different kinds of racial agendas. They believe that science fiction can demoralize white men, or science fiction can be used in order to encourage white men to realize their destinies and ultimately to throw off the supposed oppression by non-white people. And so I think that his critical practice is actually way more important than his other media appearances might suggest.
You write about the English philosopher Nick Land, and I wonder if you could tell us who he is, what his ideas are, and how, in a sense, he helps, from his repugnant vantage point, how he frames these ideas that are kind of themes within science fiction and the right.
Nick Land was an academic in the UK who went through some kind of break and ultimately came out on the other side on the far right. He drew a lot upon Curtis Yarvin, who's maybe better known now, but he has this vision of accelerating capitalism and accelerating many of the forms of domination and exploitation that we see today. He believes that if we intensify capitalism, ultimately we will create a superior forms of intelligence that will supersede humanity. And all of this sounds pretty strange. But we could kind of see the ways that this kind of thinking has become pervasive among many tech elites. This idea that they are the smartest people with the highest IQs, and they're in the process of creating godlike machines that are going to take over from humanity and bring about some kind of different future. All of this, too, I should emphasize, is very much rooted in ideas from eugenics and scientific racism. When he says, when he suggests that the elites are especially smart, he's very much suggesting that this is a biological property, that it's inherent to them, and that only some populations and individuals are capable of bringing about this future where technology and economic dynamism accelerates to the point of creating some new being and some break with the past.
Speaking of breaks with the past, or at least this moment, you mentioned Curtis Yarvin, who's the kind of guru to the tech far right, and Peter Thiel, head of Palantir, and then, of course, figures like Elon Musk. In some ways, it seems that the most sort of speculative people around are people who have tremendous power as heads of these vast companies with huge government contracts. How do you understand the kind of place of speculative fiction in a moment on the right, in a moment when our present has elements that are so kind of outlandish the visions that a lot of these people have of kind of leaving the masses behind, whether it's on seasteads, out in the ocean, or, you know, on other planets. How do you kind of make sense of this moment where some of the reality seems to have gotten, you know, even ahead of some of the things that other people could be dreaming of?
It does seem like science fiction has become increasingly bound up in finance and the tech sector and more broadly elite culture, which now uses science fiction visions of going to Mars or uploading consciousness to machines as a way of justifying its project of capitalist and other forms of exploitation and control. So I do think we're past the point of thinking science fiction is entirely innocent when it's being used for those purposes. But I think that science fiction can also provide a counterpoint, if not an antidote, to that kind of thinking. I mean, we increasingly see ecological science fiction and other kinds of science fiction that are interested in looking at the limits to this idea that you can just go to another planet and leave our damaged ecosystem behind, or the idea that, yeah, you can escape to Galt's Gulch or a seastead or some other space and leave behind the masses. I think that insofar as science fiction is useful for political change in the present moment, it's going to need to think about the limits to imagination and the practical realities that we're going to have to deal with in the coming decades if we're going to survive climate change and other kinds of ecological disasters.
I want to talk to you more specifically about that, but I should say that I'm speaking with the author of Speculative Whiteness, Science Fiction and the Alt-Right. Jordan Carroll is my guest. I'm Sasha Lilly. This is Against the Grain. So switching to, or turning our focus to, fights within the world of science fiction, because as you've been arguing, science fiction is not one monolithic thing, and there are different political currents that run through it. Can you tell us about the controversy that took place, really not right at this moment, but in the relatively recent past, over the Hugo Awards, which are the longest running awards in science fiction? Can you tell us how the Hugo Awards became sort of a battleground for some of these differing currents within science fiction itself?
So a little over a decade ago, we saw a period in which there were all of these different culture wars, Gamergate, later Comicsgate. And what we saw was the far right realized, as well as the conservative right, realized that it could use online platforms as a way of getting its message across and trying to take over or attack different kinds of institutions. So what happened was there were some conservative genre authors who claimed that the Hugo Awards were dominated by social justice and by a small group of insiders who were excluding them from the awards and from the recognition that they thought they deserved. And these were the sad puppies, they called themselves. I won't go into why they created that meme, but that's what they called themselves. And so they rallied their followers online in order to dominate the nomination process. Because a relatively small number of people nominate for the Hugo Awards, a group that is all voting for a slate at the time could easily get people nominated. Later on, though, this far-right blogger, Vox Day, joined with this movement. He created his group, the Rabid Puppies, and he saw this as an opportunity not only to promote the authors that he liked, but also as a way of getting back at science fiction culture, which had ostracized him after he made a number of racist statements suggesting that people of color, including N.K. Jemisin, were effectively incapable of creating science fiction. So this became kind of a raging controversy. There are different waves of nominations, but ultimately they managed to sweep the nominations, and they were finally rebuffed by the community. Their nominations often lost to no award. One of the odd things about the Hugo Awards is that you can vote for nothing over any of the options. And I think this clearly showed that although there was this conservative, or in the case of Vox Dei, far right tendency within science fiction culture, there was a countervailing force within it. And since then, it seems like they have kind of faded from view, at least within the Hugo Awards. But what that shows is the ways that these kinds of culture war debates can become opportunities for the right to raise their profile. Suddenly, everybody was talking about Vox Dei, and also recruit new members who are maybe interested in the far right or interested in right-wing ideas, but haven't been plugged into that particular circle. So they got a lot of media attention that probably allowed them to pull a lot of people into that movement.
In the time we have left, I want to ask you about people now on the left. We've been speaking during the hour about writers on the right or the ways the far right has appropriated things from science fiction writers. But as you say, that from its inception, there have been science fiction writers on the left as well. How have those writers responded both, to this history in which these sort of white supremacist and far-right currents have often run through science fiction, or at least provided fodder for framing by the far right? How have they responded to that within science fiction, and of course, more broadly, the right itself writ large?
I think in recent years we've seen a number of really wonderful anti-fascist science fiction texts. Going back a little bit further, Terry Bisson's Fire on the Mountain, for example, I think is worth looking at. It imagines a kind of more utopian world, and is a direct response to the far right of that period. Same thing with Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower, which is imagining a future in which a right-wing nationalist takes over and the struggle against him. In more recent years, we have seen novels by authors like Hari Kunzru and Silvia Marina Garcia, as well as I really love the comic Superman Smashes the Klan, which is about the history of the way that the Superman radio show was used to discredit the Ku Klux Klan and make them look ridiculous. But also, it's about envisioning a future that belongs to everyone. Superman is the man of tomorrow, but he's also an immigrant, and we see in this comic book him fighting against nativists and against racists. So, I mean, we also just more broadly in science fiction have seen a strong interest in expanding the field to include people who in previous generations were marginalized or excluded entirely. I mean, so much of science fiction now is about Afrofuturism or indigenous futurism, about queer futurisms and feminist futurisms. I think we're at a point in which the institutions have begun to change and not just the narratives. Obviously, there's still way more work to be done, but I think that the science fiction community has taken seriously the presence of the far right in its midst and is trying to do things not just to keep them out, but also to change the world so that we won't see fascism prevail.
Given that the, you know, real life danger that is enveloping all of us right now of the climate crisis, which, you know, is only going to intensify, that is something that can certainly lend itself to speculative imaginings about what the future might look like. Is this a place where writers on the left, writers on the right are sort of competing in terms of thinking through the climate crisis and possible futures? Or is this something that is really mainly the terrain of left-wing writers?
I think that in science fiction literature, the left is mainly thinking about this, but there are plenty of right-wing people who are speculating about what's going to happen when climate change intensifies. You know, they imagine a kind of lifeboat situation in which only a small number of people might survive these different disasters, and they want to make sure that it is primarily people who look like them. Although obviously there are also people on the right who deny the existence of global warming and climate change and envision a future that is entirely powered by fossil fuels going on forever and ever, which is perhaps the most absurd form of science fiction.
Right. Speaking of the most fantastical of all. Jordan Carroll, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Jordan Carroll is a writer and independent scholar, author of Speculative Whiteness, Science Fiction and the Alt-Right. He's also the author of Reading the Obscene, Transgressive Editors and the Class Politics of U.S. Literature, and co-editor of the forthcoming Reactionary World Building. You've been listening to Against the Grain. I'm Sasha Lilly. Thanks so much for listening, and please tune in again next time.